particularly the education maintenance allowance and so on and so forth in terms of provision at that stage, and therefore has set us up well for Tony Pearce, who I did have to remind myself that this is the case. She's president of the NUS, and do you know that she's got 7 million members? I've just got a feeling that there will be a few other unions that will be only too pleased to have that sort of backing. So we'd better listen to her. Tony.
Yeah, no pressure. Thanks. I want to start by thanking the New Visions for Education group, and actually in particular to Fred, who just happens to be my predecessor, and hopefully in however many years' time I will be still being invited to give speeches about education. Particularly to Fred for the invite to speak tonight. I'm actually very excited to share a platform with all of you, but particularly with Fred. And I also wanted to say a huge thank you for the work that you do, both the people I think they're hearing from, but the people in the room as well, and the hours that you put into aiding what I think is a badly needed discussion about the future of education. I'm really grateful to be given this opportunity to talk. I think what I'm supposed to be doing is talking about the view from young people, the view from students in the system, but also the view as far as the future of further and higher education goes. And I think that the publication of this book really shows the wealth of experience and insight that continues to come from this group. And this kind of continued ambition for a better education system. And I think it's really important that when we talk about our education system, that we do talk about it more holistically than I think anybody else does in the political sphere, which is that we talk about it from preschool to postgraduate and all of the stages in between. Because it sort of strikes me, I suppose, as we approach the next general election, as I'm sure you can imagine most of my attention is focused on, that on the whole it's pretty hard to recognise the same will and ambition from today's national politicians to have any ambition for the future of the education system in individual parts, but particularly as a kind of holistic national service. It seems to me that some of the noises that we hear in fringe meetings or at hustings, we are a long way from any of the major political parties proposing realistic and pragmatic changes like the ones that are outlined in this book, that we know could represent real progress for the future of education. It isn't really any huge surprise to me that this book isn't full of glowing reviews for Michael Gove's actions as Secretary of State in the last 5 years, and neither really his successor, Nicky Morgan. But actually, I don't think that it would be enough simply to undo the damage that's been done. And I don't really want to spend all of this time talking about the problems of the system. When I first stood to be president of NUS 2 years ago, I got up and said that I wanted to make sure that NUS was about talking about the things that we wanted to see happen rather than just opposing things and defending the status quo. I think that we have a responsibility together to stand for a vision of what we believe that education should be. But I think that we have to recognise that it has been a long 5 years for the students and young people who found themselves losing out at the hands of this government. And it is absolutely right that we begin these discussions by talking about what changes will benefit learners right now. It isn't an easy time to be in education, whether you're learning or working. Funding for courses is being cut left, right and centre, particularly right and centre. The education maintenance allowance, which meant that thousands of people like me wouldn't have had to work in a Chinese takeaway after college like I did just to get by and afford food or afford the bus to college, has gone. And as rightly, I think, Helena pointed out, the agenda making it harder and harder to get a second chance, that you have one shot to get it right in your life with no consideration for the pressures on learners. And then actually just a couple of weeks ago, another 24% cut to the adult education budget that will see hundreds of thousands of adults losing out on an opportunity for further education. And interestingly enough, I can't tell you whether that cut will happen over the next year in Parliament or the next Parliament, because Vince Cable and George Osborne can't agree with each other on how that cut will fall. And I think it tells you everything you need to know about the attitude of the coalition towards further education, that they don't even know what their 24% cut, what form it will take and what shape it will take. I think that we're seeing people's choices reducing and making it harder for them to turn things around if they go wrong. That when young people leave school, they graduate or they finish study, that youth employment, in fact, means that millions of young people are struggling just to find work. Over 700,000 young people are still out of work, and over 250,000 young people are classed in long-term unemployment. Almost a million people who don't just need a second chance because they can't get a first chance. And so I think it's really clear to me that we have to move forward to build a better system for the next generation. I talk at the moment, as you can probably imagine, about the broken promises of politicians when it comes to education. There are a particular group of politicians who broke a particular set of promises at the last election to students. And I could talk about that all night, but I won't, because I think that there are a series of other broken promises to young people and students that we need to talk about as well. I am president of the National Union of Students, and I represent 7 million students in my job. About 2 million of those are in higher education in universities, and about 5 million of them are in further education. And I'm the first president of NUS not to have been to university, so I studied at an FE college. And when I was growing up, like the rest of my generation, and probably I think all of the generations before me, I was told that if you worked hard and you went to school and you put the effort in, and maybe you got a part-time job or did some volunteering, and you did everything you were supposed to and you played by the rules, then one day you'd get a job that would pay the bills and be able to support your family, and not a kind of life of luxury, but, you know, the kind of things that I want now, which is maybe to buy a house and have children, which, you know, seems so distant from people, I think, in my generation. And I think that it's that promise that's been broken that I think is the most worrying. And I think most of that comes from the changes that we see to our education system. Because I think now that there's a kind of asterisk that underlines that promise, that you have to go to school and get the grades and you have to do all of these things, but you have to make sure that you do them first time round. Because there won't be a second chance to retake your exams if, like me, you completely screwed them up the first time around. That you won't be able to go back as an adult into education because there just won't be the places for you. And if you can find a place, you'll have to take out up to £4,000 worth of loans just to do a level 2 course to get a GCSE level qualification. That if you want to get a degree, that you will be required to take on mortgage levels of debt that we see students graduating with an average of £50,000 worth of debt. That it's seen as kind of standard and actually not just part of your normal life, but actually something that will help you work your way out of poverty, to do an unpaid internship, to work for free for up to 6 months to get your first shot at a job. It's really interesting, actually, when we talk about this, because people say, but these are opportunities. But the reality is that we all know that they're only opportunities for some people. Out of all the journalists that are surveyed talking about their beginning of work into education, into journalism, 72% of them say that they took on an internship to get into journalism, and 91 of those internships were unpaid, which I think not just tells you a terrible story about the sector, about the system, but it also, I think, tells you everything you need to know about why we hear the stories we hear about what education is like in the media today. There are a series of hoops that you really have to jump through that are out of reach for the vast majority of young people and students in this country who face a system that drags them back down, I think, no matter how hard they try. And we're told that this is good for us. It's good for me as the consumer of my education, that I have more choice than ever, and that the power is in my hands to choose what my education will be like. And our education system has been heading down this path of consumerism and marketisation for a long time. I by no means think that this is just the last government. And it's outlined in the book particularly. But I think there's been a political consensus over several decades that introducing more choice and introducing the market and consumerism into all education, particularly higher and further education, represents a benefit to students themselves. And that, in fact, higher education itself only represents a benefit to individuals. It just isn't true. Education has been packaged, advertised and marketed on the supposed value of financial benefit to students themselves. But actually, in fact, since the peak of the Industrial Revolution, I'd argue that your degree has relatively less value year on year. The introduction of fees and the raising them in higher education, I think, has driven a wedge between students and their institutions. They're being coerced into viewing their institutions as service providers, that they should be delivering value for money. People working out at the back of their lecture theatres how much their lectures are costing them per minute, I don't think is perhaps the best way to deliver education in the UK. I think it ignores the real power and potential of education for the next generation and to our economy. And I think it completely undermines the value of an academic or vocational community in which you are a partner in your education and that you put in as much as you get out. Politicians for a long time have promised us that a new funding model would mean enhanced choices for individual students, a more sustainable and secure funding arrangement, greater diversity and flexibility, and more opportunities for all. But actually, there is less choice. There are more cuts to our most diverse student groups, a huge clampdown on international students, graduates leaving with mortgage levels of debt, and FE students dropping out because they can't afford to get by. A more homogenous system than we've ever seen in higher education, where institutions are encouraged to compete with each other to get bums on seats, not to really push the boundaries of what education looks like, and in fact, what research looks like. I think that mine is a generation that's in desperate need of solutions, but I feel very much let down by politicians and pretty much met with silence by those who have kind of turned a blind eye, or even worse, been lobbying to take us further down this dead-end road. And I think that's why we have to consider this election to be a turning point if we want to secure a new deal for students. I'm really glad that this book is calling for the phasing out of tuition fees and the restoration of public funding to universities, but also for support for further education to be put on an equal footing. Because I think that if we're going to do anything to change the futures of my generation and the generation that's next after me, is that we have to challenge this false assumption that the greatest benefit of education is to the individual themselves. We have to challenge the appalling treatment of those people who, I think, in a sort of backhanded compliment, are now known as the forgotten 50%. Unfortunately, I know that it kind of comes from a good place, but I can't help feeling a little bit uncomfortable whenever I'm referred to as being a part of the forgotten 50%. Many people talk about championing vocational education, but actually the reality of that, I don't think, comes true in our colleges. For me, championing vocational education doesn't mean leaving the minimum wage for apprentices at less than £3 an hour. It doesn't mean saying that we want more apprenticeships in the next government, but not talking about what the quality of those apprenticeships look like or whether you'll be able to get into full-time employment following one. There are still apprenticeship providers who both accredit, employ and teach the whole of their apprenticeship as one company, and that absolutely cannot be right. We have to be really honest, though, that non-graduates are twice as likely to be unemployed as graduates. And in fact, inside that figure, about 1 million young people unemployed, there are lots of statistics I think we should pay more attention to than we do at the moment. 47% of young black people are unemployed. They're twice as likely to be unemployed as young white people. And those with disabilities are 30% more likely to be unemployed than those without. I've talked a lot, I think, about employment, but I think that it's important. 80% of the people that I represent say that they study to improve their job prospects in the future. They say that the reason that they go into further or higher education is to get themselves a job that pays well, a job that pays fairly, and a job that allows them to live a comfortable life. And I think it's really worrying that our education system isn't delivering for them. But is it any wonder that those statistics about unemployment are so shocking? When the education maintenance allowance has been scrapped, the adult learning grant is gone, careers advice and youth centres have been disbanded, tuition fees have been trebled, that we've had funding into teaching grants in higher education completely slashed. And now we've introduced that same failed experiment of tuition fees and loans into further education colleges. And I know that's why many of my colleagues in student unions across the country, including one of our vice presidents, who have been running a campaign to save youth services locally, will be really glad to read the chapter on the importance of youth services in supporting the life chances of young people. Because I think that students need more than ever to be engaged in the world around them, in their communities, but also in their country. They tell us that they want to go out and vote to secure a new deal for education. And I'm really glad that many of our manifesto commitments have already been adopted from many of the major parties. But the reality is that at the moment students tell me they want to vote, but they don't know who for. That none of their politicians they see are presenting any kind of ideas for them in education. None of them have the ambition and the will and the drive to talk about the education system that they want to see. And that's why I think it's so exciting and so important that there are people here who are outlining what those things are for politicians. I think for me, for us in NUS, that means a lot of things, actually. It means restoring AS levels, resits and modular learning so that when you face barriers because of your family background, your disability or your caring responsibilities, that your choices aren't made for you and that you get a second chance. I think it means protecting and improving student support for students in further and higher education, whether that's the education maintenance allowance, the adult learning grant, or higher education student maintenance support, which at the moment there's an £8,000 shortfall between the maximum amount of student financial support you can get and the average cost of living for a student. I think it means protecting and improving the disabled students allowance. And I think it also means ensuring that international students in our education system don't have their study and their lives disrupted by the failure of their colleges or universities or because of a crisis in their home country over which they have no control. I think it means a government that will phase out tuition fees and finally restore public funding to universities. But I also think that for me, this means young people having an engagement in their education which completely changes from the terms it is at the moment. The engagement you are told that you have at the moment is about exercising personal choice, exercising financial choice over the path that you take in education. And what I really want to see is young people being able to take collective choice and collective action over the future of their education system. And I really hope that that translates into young people voting at the next general election. And I suppose that I have long-term calls to action for political parties today, but I also have short-term calls to action, hopefully, for the people in this room. I'm sure that every single one of you in this room is registered to vote, and I'm sure that you probably all know who you're voting for. But I'm also sure that you know lots of people who aren't, and I'm almost sure that most of those people are young people. Because I absolutely do. I'm having a battle with my dad at the moment, actually. He's never voted in his life. Because between the last election and now, a million young people have dropped off the electoral roll. A million young people who feel like they have been abandoned by the political system generally, not just this government, who don't talk about education apart from when they're announcing the next cut or the next increase in tuition fees. And the reality is that we need those young people and students to turn out at the ballot box if we want them to have a say in their education system. And so, if you do know young people who need to register to vote, then go away from here and tell them to, please. I think that regardless of what happens actually at the election, it will be a pretty long 5 years ahead, no matter which party or parties form the next government. But I feel really confident actually, and I suppose I would echo your optimism from the beginning of this evening, that actually with the support and continued knowledge and pressure from groups like yours and organisations, I hope, like mine, that we will be there challenging those politicians every step of the way. And so I kind of wanted to say thank you for that, and I really hope that I imagine that the things that I've said about what future governments should do we would all agree with, but that we can actually make them happen through political pressure. So thank you again.
Thank Thank you, Tony, for making me feel guilty, as I always